Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the MLB Daily Dish Podcast, the Roster Rhetorical, Episode 7. As always, I'm your host, Chris Schubert. Alongside of me are my two co-hosts. First, Matt Goldman. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm okay. And as always, I'm not going to use the nickname this week, Mike. You changed it in our Google Doc for the show plan. So I'll just address you as Mike Bates this week. Mike, how are you?
I'm pretty good, man. How are you?
I'm good. I say this every time we start the show, that we always have a jam-packed show, but I think this one is especially a jam-packed show. We have a lot of things going on, so I'm going to jump right into it. We want to get some quick rumors, trades, things out of the way, and then we're going to jump into the meat of the show this week. So we'll start with the big trade that happened today between the Twins and the Yankees that saw Aaron Hicks and John Ryan Murphy get swapped in what was somewhat of a surprising trade to see a former first-round pick and Aaron Hicks get moved. Mike, you're our Twins guy, so I'll go to you on this. What were your initial thoughts when you heard this trade?
Well, I was actually kind of surprised. I mean, which is weird because I wrote an article just this morning about the various options the Twins had now that they have secured the rights to negotiate with Byung-ho Park. And one of those options was to trade Aaron Hicks. And lo and behold, later in the same day, there he goes to the New York Yankees. I am really surprised to see Hicks go. I mean, he's 25. He still has a little bit of room to grow. He finally kind of righted the ship this year after really being lost the last couple of years and mishandled by the Twins. But at the same time, they are really flush with outfielders, and they really are short on quality catchers. And John Ryan Murphy is interesting. You know, he looks like he has an okay bat. He's only 24 years old. The Twins seem to think that with another year of backing up, or at least another half year backing up, he could take over for Kurt Suzuki. You know, I still think Hicks probably has more upside, but he hasn't learned to hit right-handed pitching, and he might just be a Chris Young type clone who the Yankees are losing through free agency. You know, a league average catcher is really valuable. So if John Ryan Murphy can be that, that's fantastic.
And Matt, this seemed to be one of those, both teams had needs and surpluses. They swapped them and everybody wins here, right?
Yeah, it kind of, I mean, obviously it was only two players compared to six, but this kind of reminded me of the Mariners Rays trade that happened just a few days ago. I want to say it might've been six now. But both teams kind of addressed an area that they need. Kurt Suzuki is going to be a free agent next year, assuming that they cut down on his at-bats so he doesn't reach the 450 vesting option plateau. And with Murphy, he's under team control through, I want to say, the 2020 season. So at worst, you have an average bat who can catch behind the plate, either in a backup role or a starting role, and then, you know, best case scenario is his bat kind of picks up with more at-bats, or not to say the word bats, you know, a million times in this one sentence, but, you know, his development is not over. I don't think anyone's development is ever over as a hitter, at least until they've been in the big leagues for a considerable amount of time. So it's a little early to cap Murphy's ceiling, and who knows what he could do with a longer term exposure behind the plate.
And this sort of spirals off into what we've been hearing around the Yankees, that they were not trying to, but that Brett Gardner is available in trades. We saw that the Yankees and Mariners have discussed a Gardner trade, and the acquisition of Aaron Hicks could maybe propel that forward. They have an outfield that is constructed of Brett Gardner, Jacoby Ellsbury, Carlos Beltran, Dustin Ackley, and Chris Young. You add Hicks into that mix, you know, Chris Young's a free agent, so they probably won't bring him back like they may have if they didn't get Hicks. So Hicks will probably take his spot, maybe platoon with Dustin Ackley. You don't know what you're going to get with Carlos Beltran. You know, he's getting older, and there's always the chance that he gets hurt. Jacoby Ellsbury, you're not going to be able to move. He's signed for a long time, and he's your guy in center field. And then there's Brett Gardner, who is probably the most appealing of these options. So, Mike, you know, where do the Yankees go from here? I don't think they're done, do you?
No, I don't. And you know, what's really interesting is that Gardner and Ellsbury are similar kinds of players. I think over the last couple of years, we've seen Ellsbury slip a little bit, and that's a huge concern if you're them. But with two such similar players, the Yankees had an opportunity to get younger. And if they move Gardner, can continue to upgrade perhaps in their rotation where they need some help or at second base.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that they're not done in the sense that they have a surplus in this outfield area, but they also have some guys that they really can't rely on, and they have some other needs that they need to address, and trading a guy like Brett Gardner could allow them to go with what they have and maybe address some needs elsewhere. So, all right, we're going to move on to our next rumor or news of the day. And that will be the Alex Gordon rumors that are beginning to circulate. And guys, the hot stove is beginning to heat up in the sense, that we're hearing more about teams, but there's not a lot of activity yet. And that includes the big name outfielders like Alex Gordon. But in terms of Gordon, we are hearing that the Cubs, the Astros, and the Orioles, I had to make sure I got the right three there, are linked to Gordon in the early going. Matt, I'll go to you here first. You hear these three teams. Does Gordon make sense for any of them?
I don't think he makes sense for the Cubs, just based off of the fact that Schwarber is going to hit and is going to be a regular in the lineup next year, unless he was injured or something drastic happened with his production. So the only place he can play is left field. And they've got Jorge Soler, same thing, unless he gets knocked out with another injury. He'll be in right field for the whole year. And Gordon just isn't a center fielder. So I think the Cubs would definitely like Gordon if they had room for him, but he just doesn't fit what they need right now. The Orioles, I could see they do need an outfielder. I know Gerardo Parra is a free agent. I think that they at least had some mutual interest in agreeing to a deal at least earlier in the season. So I think of these three teams, the Astros make the most sense. Colby Rasmus is a free agent. And Gordon, while he doesn't have as much power as Colby Rasmus does, you could see how he would easily fit their lineup. He could be a table setter at the top of the lineup, and he's a much better defensive player than Colby Rasmus. His numbers took a slight hit in 2015 because of the injury, but Gordon has been one of the best left fielders in baseball since he moved to that position full time.
Mike, the Astros are your sleeper team this winter, and now they're connected to Gordon. Does the money Fangraphs projected him to get a 5-year, $90 million contract in their crowdsourcing of contracts, does that concern you at all for Houston to maybe fork over that kind of money?
No, not at all. I think Houston is a team on the rise. We talked about this last week, actually, and about how Houston really has a ton of room in their payroll. And I think 590 is actually significantly low compared to what Gordon is going to wind up getting. And I don't think that the Astros will have any trouble paying that. He does fit in really well with a team that values defense and that has a really strong analytical background. And I think that, you're right, that Matt is right, that of those three teams, really the Astros are the ones that make sense.
And I'm sure as we move forward that these are not going to be the only three teams linked to Gordon. The outfield market is loaded with talent, and as pieces get signed, other teams will jump into the mix. But it's interesting to see that these three teams jumped out as the front runners, or at least have the early interest. Moving on,
I think you're going to see the Cubs involved in a lot of these discussions. I mean, they just have a lot of financial resources, and with the kind of return to prominence, similar to the Astros that they had this year, I think they're going to be eager to improve their team however they can. And it might not be Gordon, because as you pointed out, Schwarber's got to go somewhere. But I think we're going to hear the Cubs a lot this winter, connected to a lot of people.
I think that's absolutely right, especially in the sense that they need starting pitching and they're looking to upgrade in center field, two of the positions that have a high surplus in the free agent market. So it wouldn't surprise me to see them linked to seven or eight guys all at the same time, just because of how active Theo Epstein and his guys are going to be. Moving on, we have one more news piece to get to, and there's probably things that we're missing or things that are going on while we're doing this show, as always. But some news that broke since the last time we were here doing our podcast, and that is the news that Lance Lynn is having Tommy John surgery and will miss the 2016 season. And guys, for a starting pitching market that was already loaded with teams looking to get these top-end guys, the Cardinals are in the mix. Matt, I'll start with you. I mean, where do the Cardinals go? I mean, are they just going to leap right in and go after a big-name guy, or are they going to go elsewhere?
I don't think that this is going to propel them into the David Price market. You know, if they were already in that market, then I don't think this changes anything. But I think, if anything, this might make them go after, you know, a guy like John Lackey, who pitched for them last year and at the tail end of 2014. They gave him a qualifying offer, so... obviously, that's going to hurt his market value. It just a little bit at the very least. A lot of teams probably would balk at giving up a draft pick for a 37-year-old pitcher who was coming off his best season in a number of years. So I don't think that this is really going to change their game plan. So unless they were already going to go for the tier one aces, you know, obviously that's something that they can do, but Lance Lynn, he's going to be around at least through the end of 2017, if I remember his contract correctly. And so really they just need a one-year stopgap or a two-year stopgap to get Lynn back up on the mound.
Mike, the Cardinals have been linked, or people have said that Chris Davis would be a good fit for them in the first base, for the first base position. Now that they have this need to go after a pitcher because of Lynn being out, you have Wainwright who's getting older, Carlos Martinez hasn't really figured out how to not throw 100% the entire time, you don't know what you have in Michael Wacha, there are so many question marks around this rotation, and then you add the Lynn news on top of it, is this going to force them to maybe abandon the plans to upgrade the offense and really go head first into fixing their pitching situation?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think I would start by saying I don't think it's entirely clear that the Cardinals need to upgrade their rotation at this point. you know, they are getting Adam Wainwright back from injury, and while there are definitely questions about his durability, he has in the past been an incredibly stalwart pitcher for them. Jaime Garcia, who am I missing here? Carlos Martinez, and Michael Wacha. You know, these are good pitchers. They have a front four that will match up well with the rest of the league. They got good production last year out of Tyler Lyons or Tim Cooney. So this is a team that has options. And also keep in mind that their team ERA last year was 2.94. Their ERA plus was 135, which is one of the highest marks of all time. This is a team that had room to drop in terms of its starting rotation. And so, you know, I think if they focused instead on bringing in a Chris Davis or another big bat to play first base or in the corner outfield spot, I don't think they would really miss a beat.
This question is for both of you. Matt, you can go first. What impact does the Alex Reyes suspension have on this decision?
You know, Alex Reyes can't really be counted on anything, at least for, you know, from my point of view. I doubt that the Cardinals were really planning on Alex Reyes to be a huge part of the rotation. I was under the assumption that they were looking at him more of like a mid-season call-up. Maybe he could help out in an injury-type situation. Obviously, he was their top prospect, and the suspension is unfortunate. But I don't think that Alex Reyes going down really threw a huge wrench, at least, in their plans. It just rather delayed them more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, Reyes is fantastic as a prospect, but he is only 20. He has only 8 starts above A-ball. He wasn't somebody that was going to be in that rotation at the start of the year anyway. So, you know, it's I think Matt's right on as far as that goes. You know, and Marco Gonzalez had a really disappointing year at AAA. And I don't know that he should be in their plans either at the start of the year. So, I definitely agree that Reyes's suspension shouldn't alter their plans at all.
It'll be interesting. As we said, the hot stove is heating up, and the more rumors will circulate, and I'm sure we'll hear the Cardinals' name with some pitchers that maybe we didn't expect them to be involved with. Now, for the first time ever on this podcast, we're actually going to take a break, and we're going to come back with a new feature segment show thing, I don't even know how to describe it, that we're debuting here on this episode of the
feature
roster.
Show thing. Yeah, that makes
a
lot of
feature
sense.
Show thing. I think that works. I think it describes what we're doing here on the Roster Rhetorical, known as "Hey Roster Rhetorical, fix my team," where the three of us with an expert guest try to fix your team. So don't go anywhere. Listen to whatever song that I put in here, probably 30 seconds worth of audio. Come back and watch us try to fix this week's mystery team. You're going to have to come back and find out which one it is. So we'll be right back, guys. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the other side of the break. I think that's the first time I've ever said that, the other side of the break. Well, never mind. Welcome back to the second half of the show, and we are debuting our new feature show thing, as we so eloquently stated in the first half of the show. Hey, Roster Rhetorical, fix my team. And the mystery team this week, although you probably can see it based on the title of the show episode, is the Philadelphia Phillies. And joining us from the good fight is Liz Rocher. Did I get that right?
You did.
Yes. All right. I was working on it before we started, and we're good. All right. So, Liz, welcome. First of all, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're excited.
So glad to be here.
We're excited because this could either be one of our best ideas ever or one of our worst ideas ever. We're not really sure. So what we're going to do is each of us have come up with a plan of 4 or 5 points that we think can fix the Phillies both in the short term and the long term. And we're each going to present them to you, and you're going to tell us how stupid they are, how great they are, and we'll just go from there and get into a big old conversation about the Phillies. So we decided before the show that Mike is going to go first. Probably so.
Well, you decided that before the show.
That's true. I did decide that before the show that you were going to go first, but you didn't object.
Well, my objections were silent.
Well, it's because you were probably getting some scotch. So
That's true.
Okay, so Mike, go ahead. Kick us off with your first plan, your key to your plan to fixing the Phillies.
Sure thing. So, Liz, my dear friend Liz.
Oh, look at this. Already he's starting because he's trying to earn the point at the end here.
Well, sure. I mean, listen, it's a competition, and I need to win it. Liz, first of all, before I get started, I want you to remember all the good times we've shared at Sabre.
Many drunk times.
All the drinks we've consumed, and all the laughs that we've had, mostly at the expense of Michael Bauman. And I want to have you thinking of that as we go through my points here. So I think my goal for the Phillies is just to get through 2016 with an improved team. And I think that's an easy goal to achieve because so many of the problems that the Phillies have had are gone. Cliff Lee and his injuries are gone. Chase Utley, for as wonderful as his hair might be, and as beloved as he might be in Philadelphia, was a shadow of himself over the last couple of years. Jimmy Rollins is gone. God, if there's a God, Cody Ashe is going to be gone. So I think a lot of these problems are going to take care of themselves. And a lot of the pitchers who utterly failed them last year are not going to get another chance, I hope. So I think improving the team is going to be pretty easy. And what we're really trying to do is target a twin style leap in 2017. Okay. Not a super aggressive Astros type leap or Cubs type leap, but a sizable move back to 500. And I think one of the first things that we do is we just commit to getting through this last year with Howard. You know, as much fun as it is to say, hey, let's trade Brian Howard for a prospect, you and I both know that that's not happening. And we know that Howard can still kind of hit right-handed pitching. And we know Darren Roof can hit the hell out of left-handed pitching. So let's just really commit to aggressive platooning at first base with Howard and Roof. And let's just get through 2016. Together, they will make a perfectly average first baseman as long as we don't expose them to same side pitching. Then I think we need some multi-year affordable corner outfield help. You know, I really like some of the guys that you have coming through the system, including Nick Williams. I think Aaron Althur is a pretty pretty decent looking prospect and bat. But I, you know, I'm hesitant because, you know, prospects can take a step back, timelines get screwed up, and I really think having a good mid-range guy there is going to be helpful for maybe 2 to 3 years. And I'm thinking somebody like Gerardo Parra or Colby Rasmus to just kind of get you over the hump and be a 2 to 3 win player. Then I want to sign one mid-rotation starter who is going to be good at least 2 years from now, so that they're going to be there in 2017 and 2018 when the Phillies are back to, at least in my mind, being a perfectly decent to good club in the NL East. And so I'm thinking somebody like Doug Fister or Giovanni Gallardo or Wei-Yin Chen would fit really well with this team as a guy who they're not going to have to overpay for, and as somebody who is in their early 30s and is going to be around for another at least three years, though you probably have to sign him for 4. And then I know you have a lot of interesting young pitchers who could fill out the back end of the rotation. You know, I like Jared Eichhoff. I like Aaron Nolan. And I think that there are a lot of good young pitchers in the minors, especially that you guys got from the Cole Hamels and the Utley deal and the Papelbon deal. Pavetta, I like Pavetta. That's an interesting guy. But I think, you know, really we want to use that back end of the rotation to target a high upside guy on a 1-year contract. Somebody who at the deadline we can potentially flip, and who can bring back some kind of return while opening up a spot for one of these younger pitchers. And I'm thinking somebody like Matt Latos or Brandon Morrow, maybe even Justin Masterson if he'll take a 1-year make good deal, to really kind of build their value back and then trade them and move on. And those are my thoughts. There you go.
Well, you put a lot of thought into that, and I appreciate it. And I enjoy how you've suggested that the Phillies sign guys who have names that people recognize and who might actually be attractive to other teams, because that's not really the way they've been going with signing anyone. If you look at who they signed to start the year, it was Aaron Harang. They signed Jerome Williams to a 2-year contract for some reason. And they had put Jeff Francoeur on board. I'm not going to say anything bad about Jeff Francoeur because I love him. Now I love him, as opposed to the beginning of the year when I did not. he has won me over, and I'm not ashamed to say it anymore. I used to hide it because I was
ashamed. Sheer power of his charisma.
Yes. I don't disagree with any of the things that you said. I just don't think the Phillies are going to do any of them. Like, I just don't see them putting money into anybody. They have so much money. They have Scrooge McDuck's, like, piles of money that they can dive into, but the organization just doesn't want to spend any money right now.
So you know, this is almost like an Astros-style rebuild where they completely tear down and come back?
I think so. I mean, Klentak hasn't made any moves yet, really. So it's tough to say anything.
Give him a couple days, Liz.
Yes, I know. Yes,
give him a week or two.
I'm putting no judgment on him, but the one thing that he said that everyone took from that press conference he did is that Phillies don't want to go to the free agent market to find a lot of value right now. Because why spend money on guys who may not be good in a couple of years when they might actually be good? If they could sign someone like Matt Latos, Giovanni Gallardo, it would be kind of cool because they'd have a rotation that had a chance of not totally sucking next year. I mean, they've got young pitchers who are good and they could all take a leap forward, but it's going to be rough going for a little while. And my dream is for them to sign someone like David Price, but they're not going to do it because they're not going to be good for at least 2 years. So why sign someone for that long? So I like your plan, but no.
Wow. Okay. Just flat out
just
no.
Just shot me down.
Okay. Also, most of your plan, I will say, your first point about Ryan Howard is 100% on target, though. Okay. The guy's been on the market for like 3 years. No one wants him. You know what? But the Phillies means, aren't. What?
This means my plan is screwed.
Well, I can't wait to hear it.
It's not good.
I'm so excited.
All right, Matt, do you want to go next, or do you want me to go next?
I'll go next because I think that Liz is going to like my plan.
Oh, so we're going to save my plan that has everything she doesn't want in it for the end? All right, that's fair.
Yeah, you know, the grand finale.
Okay, that's fair. All right, go ahead, Matt.
So my plan is to kind of, I guess, not really do a whole lot because, like you said, what's the point right now? The Phillies aren't going to be good next year, so let's just save up a few million dollars and move on. You know, if we had TiVo in real life, we'd skip on to the 2017 season.
No doubt.
You know, it's basically like playing OOTP. You move on. So my first move as fake Phillies.
That's Out of the Park Baseball, by the way.
Yes.
Great game.
Initiated a fantastic computer game.
It's very addictive.
Yeah.
So my first move is a non-move, which is to keep Ken Giles unless someone just utterly blows the Phillies out of the water with some ridiculous offer, because there was a report earlier today that said that while Klentak isn't actively shopping Giles, he's also not shutting down that avenue as a potential trade source because of how many teams are looking for late inning relief after watching the Royals just dominate everyone with their bullpen. But as by himself, Ken Giles isn't going to bring back a whole lot, even though he signed through 2020 and he's, you know, one of the elite relievers in the game right now. Teams aren't going to give up, you know, a stud third base prospect or, you know, a starting pitching prospect that's one of their top guys for a reliever, no matter how good he is. So that is my first move or non-move. My second one is to sign a starting pitcher, at least one, but a lesser tier than what Bates was going for. I was thinking Scott Kazmir would probably be the upper limit, someone that you could get for maybe 2 years, who's not going to cost a whole lot of money. But even below that, maybe someone like Ryan Vogelsong, who has been in the organization before, if I remember correctly, or someone like Kyle Loesch that needs to rebuild value, or just, you know, kind of wants
using
to.
Using the worst dudes in this example for me. Vogelsong okay, all right. Continue.
I'm looking for low risk guys that aren't going to cost a whole lot anyway, so that, you know, we're just trying to get through 2016. My third move was ruined by the Mariners earlier this morning, which was to sign Franklin Gutierrez solely with the idea of trading him at the halfway point in the season if he had any value left based off of what he did in the second half of 2015. He actually, for the I can't remember how many games that he played, but he posted a better ISO than Bryce Harper did for the entire season. So if he can be anywhere close to that, he would have at least a little bit of value, you'd think. But unfortunately, Jerry DePoto ruined my dreams on that. And then my fourth move is actually tied to one of Chris's, which I agree with. So I'm not going to steal it out from under him because of how horrible his plan is. I don't want to ruin it anymore.
Yeah,
you know, with a grand finale, so I'll throw it up to Chris now.
I don't know. I think it would be great if all of Chris's ideas were awful and Liz just shredded him.
I mean, they probably are. Liz, do you want to respond to Matt's deal before you get to mine? Or?
Sure. I like pretty much the direction of what you said. Not trading Ken Giles, I think, is kind of a no-brainer. I've been very busy at work and haven't been able to follow along with some of this. So I'm trying to figure out where this came from. Did this come from Klentak himself?
I want to say it was the report was initially from CBS that said that teams were interested in Ken Giles, because why wouldn't you be? And that a few teams had actually reached out, but that
Klentak. Did I hear the Blue Jays had reached out?
I don't know if there were any specific teams named. I know in our Slack chat, someone mentioned that the Blue Jays would make sense. But Klentak said it's not a goal to trade Giles, but we're trying as much as possible to collect as many good, young, controllable quality players that we can. But they don't want to they're trying to be opportunistic at every turn, and they don't want to operate in absolutes. So, you know, if someone offered the moon for Ken Giles, Klentak might, you know, push the trade button. But for now, he's, you know, he's not going out every day saying, hey, what are you going to give me for Ken Giles?
So when you said CBS, you meant John Heyman, I'm guessing, right?
That would probably be a good guess, but I cannot lie. I do not know the exact source on that one.
I made a guess. I thought maybe it might be him. It makes no sense for them to trade him because he's young, talented, and controllable. Like, unless someone's going to offer Mike Trout for him, there's no reason to get rid of him. So I approve of that. Your second point was, I'm trying to remember now.
It was the sign of a Vogelsong and Loesch, your favorite pitchers.
Oh, for the love of God. Yeah. I think that's probably around the Vogelsong area or below because it's what they've done the past few years. And granted, that's Ruben Amaro, but it also hasn't been, you know, an overall disaster for them either. You know, Aaron Harang was pretty horrendous down the stretch, but he put in a couple of good months. You know, they've done that the last couple of years. A.G. Burnett was there on a one-year contract before he refused to take any more money from the Phillies and left. There have been a few others. And so I feel like that's not a bad way for them to continue until the rest of their young pitchers make their way up to the rotation. Because I think their goal is to have as much of a homegrown rotation as humanly possible. When you said Scott Kazner, who I love, that would be amazing, but I think he's just not what they're looking for. I mean, maybe he is. Maybe they want to sign someone like him. And I wouldn't say no to it, but I also can see why they wouldn't given their past moves.
So Matt appears to be in the lead in the clubhouse right now. That's all I'm hearing.
Well, I never finished saying to Bates that his first point was actually very good and completely correct.
Now,
and so I did approve of that.
Two hosts who have seen the plan, we know what this means for one of my bullets. This is going to get ugly. So I'll step in here. And Liz, I just want you to have an open mind while you listen to what I'm saying. That's all I ask.
I do. I have an open mind.
All right. So our first
step. Yeah, like when you laugh, it could be a whole range of laughs.
I'm now concerned that she's going to laugh at my plan, but okay.
I'm so excited. Okay. Oh, gosh.
So our first step is we have to find a way to get J.P. Crawford a position that he can play on a regular basis. And to do that, we're going to have to trade either Cesar Hernandez or Freddy Galvis. All right? And we're going to trade one of them. If you want to keep Galvis for utility and you want to move him to second base where he's played in his career so you can play Crawford at short, that's fine. If you want to trade, you know, Galvis and leave Hernandez at second, that's fine too. And when we trade them, we're going to get a pitching prospect. Now, I'm not talking a high-end starting pitching prospect. I'm looking for, you know, a high upside kind of guy that's more suited probably for the bullpen. Give us more arms there. Always need those. That'll be good. And what this does is it does exactly what we want it to do. It opens a spot for J.P. Crawford, who needs to be up in the big leagues next season. Now, our next move is another prospect that we need to get up to the big leagues is Nick Williams. At some point, he is going to have to come up and play. But until then, we're going to sign a bridge outfielder. I'm thinking Alejandro De Aza to slot in there to go with Odubel Herrera. And you got a nice little speed on base combo there. So you got
two A-plus names.
Right, Alejandro De Aza and Odubel Herrera. I mean, you can't go wrong with that. So those are our first two moves. Now, our next couple of moves have nothing to do with prospects. We're going to sign Tim Lincecum because we need a starter for our rotation that's a veteran and can bring that veteran presence. We already have Aaron Nola, we have Eichhoff, and we have Jake Thompson waiting in the wings, although we don't know when he's going to be ready. So if we sign Tim Lincecum, we have him, Nola, Eichhoff. That gives us a good solid 1-2-3, and Lincecum's not looking for a ton of money. He's coming off of a bad year. He's hurt, you know, with his hip, so There's a low-risk, high-reward type thing with Lincecum. Now, for my fourth point, I have to ask you a question, Liz. What does the catching situation look like in Philadelphia?
This isn't fair.
Well, I can't – there was no rules against asking questions. I'm just asking a question.
There's something called Google, Chris.
I think you're violating the spirit of the game.
You see what the Google Doc says. I know the answer. I just want Liz to say it for the
viewers.
Listen,
you're the host, and I'm going to defer to you, but this is, you know, total – BS.
So, Liz, the catching situation in Philadelphia, please.
I can tell you about the major leagues, but I haven't looked at a prospect list in a little while.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
All right, the catching situation is that it's Carlos Ruiz, who I love, but who is not good anymore. pretty much overall, in general. There's, Eric Kratz was before. There's, what's his name?
Rupp.
Cameron Rupp. Thank you, Cameron Rupp. No, I could see his giant face in my head. I could see that. I couldn't think of his name. There's Cameron Rupp, who was not terrible, I think. Maybe is overstating it, but
That's a good description of his play.
He was not terrible this year. He was not tragic. He didn't constantly prevent the Phillies from winning or make them lose. Okay. So it's not great at the moment, okay. I guess I'll say.
All right, so now that we know it's not great, my fourth point is we're going to sign a bridge catcher. Either Alex Avila. I had Chris Iannetta down, but it seems like he's signed already. I think. Where did he go, guys?
He's not signed yet, as far at least as of this podcast, which is 7:53 West Coast time. He's not signed anywhere, and the Mariners may not have even made a formal offer.
Okay. On Wednesday, November 11th.
So we have
2015.
Yes, thank you.
Glad we got that out of the way, so the people know when we're recording this. So Alex Avila, Chris Iannetta, or Jared Saltalamacchia. We're gonna bring one of those guys in on a 1 or 2 year deal, because we have. Oh boy, hopefully I don't butcher his name. Jorge Alfaro, who they got in the
Is that really that hard a name to say?
Look, I have trouble with all sorts of names, so don't judge, okay? So Jorge Alfaro,
judging a little bit.
They brought him in the Cole Hamels trade, correct, everybody?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I remember him now.
So he's there. He was hurt.
You got a lot of new players, Liz. Don't feel bad.
There's so many.
Lots
oh
of
my
talent.
God.
Right, right. We gotta maximize the talent that we have. That's why my plan's the best. So we have Alfaro, who's close, but, you know, coming off an injury last year, probably can't count on him right away. Ruiz is 36. He's kind of hurt a lot, and Cameron Rupp only hit 233. So if we bring in a bridge catcher, a guy that's not going to command a ton of money, remember Saltalamacchia is getting paid by the Marlins, we bring him in, we don't pay him a ton, maybe a minor league deal, and boom, we now have production out of the catching spot. And the fifth and final part of my plan is we're trading Ryan Howard. I don't care what anybody says. He needs to go. They need to eat 75%, 100%. I don't care what it takes. Eat the money. Take back a C, D-level prospect. But you got to get rid of that money so next year you have that money that you can spend and you don't have to worry about figuring out where Ryan Howard is going to play. Liz, I turn it over to you now.
Well, I'll start with the last point since I talked about a little earlier. The Phillies don't need the money. They haven't really needed it. They have so that organization has so much money, and they don't really need the money. And I think at this point, now that they've had him on the market forever, I think their focus is probably not on embarrassing him. I think they're going to let him play out his contract and then let him go, as opposed to cutting him or trading him for nothing, which I don't even think they can do. But I'll tell you the truth, the rest of your plan, I like it a lot.
Oh, yeah. That's what I like to hear.
I'm serious. Yes. I'll say about everyone's plan, there were virtues in all of it. I mean, Bates, I like your plan. I actually like it. It's best case scenario. It's what I would want them to do if they could actually make a step forward next year.
Yeah, see? She likes my plan best, guys.
That's not what you said at all.
The problem is that I don't think that's what the organization wants to do. I think that they would rather take a big leap in a couple of years rather than sign a bunch of guys. They're so focused on being as homegrown as possible, and they brought in a lot of veterans to mentor the young players. And that's pretty much all Andres Blanco and Jeff Francoeur did this year. They both sort of turned into mentors to these young players, and they just want as much youth on the team as humanly possible. That's the only problem with your plan, Bates, is I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think there's any chance that they do it. But I like it.
The problem with my plan is that it's too good. Is that what I hear you saying?
It's too sensible. It's what a different team could do. But that's not what I think the Phillies are looking to do right now.
So, Liz, if you had to pick one of the three plans presented, which one are you going with?
Bates was the most sensible and optimistic. Matt's was kind of bonkers. And yours was, to be honest, I think
you can the say best it out okay. of
four. Yes. I like it. I do. Like, I don't think there was anything crazy. You addressed a lot of the really pertinent needs. It was focused on more of a longer look.
Can I rebut this for a moment, though?
Get started.
Come on, I want to hear it.
What kind of prospect are you going to get for Freddie Galvis?
All right, okay,
Freddie
hold on.
Galvis is
stop awful. Talking. I want to say this. No, okay, he's not awful.
Bad at baseball.
No, he's not.
With the stipulation that I am worse at baseball.
He's not bad at baseball.
To be bad at baseball.
That is one thing that I did want to mention, is that there's really no way you can get anyone or anything of value for either of those guys. There's just no way. Like, Cesar Hernandez had an unbelievable hot streak this year. There is literally no way he is that good. Like, that had to have been an accident and luck all together in a giant mess, because that was what he did for a couple of months this year was ridiculous, because he is nowhere near that good. Freddie Galvis had a decent year.
But that's when you cash in. You cash in on the hot streak, and there are teams who need utility infielders. It's exactly what for.
Hey, Liz, everyone knows he's that bad. Everyone knows he's that bad.
Liz, is J.P. Crawford ready? Because I look at a guy, he spent half a year at AA. He's, 20 years old? I think he probably needs at least another half season. You can't trade Freddie Galvis when you kind of need him to hold down the position for at least half a year.
Exactly. I think you could trade, if you really wanted to, you could get rid of Cesar Hernandez. The Phillies were swimming in utility infielders. And so they could do that. I mean, Hernandez hurt himself at the end of, with a few weeks to go at least. And they were fine. I mean, it was the same as it had been. In fact, they started to win a little bit more in those last few weeks, giving me the palpitations that they weren't going to get that number one pick that I suffered so much for this year.
Swimming through middle infielders is a really disturbing image.
They have to keep Galvis. I like him a lot. He's better on defense than he looked. I think he put too much pressure on himself this year, because he's actually a more than competent infielder. He actually hit better this year than he ever has. Considering that he's filling in for Jimmy Rollins at shortstop the entire year, he could have done so much worse. But no matter what, you're not getting anyone of value for either of them. And Crawford does need a little bit more time. There's no way they bring him up at the beginning of the year. I think they give him a couple of months to see how he does. And if he's doing well at the end of 2 months, I think they'll bring him up. If he needs more time, I think they'll bring him up after the All-Star break. I think he does see the majors next year, though. There's almost no way. He's just too good and too fun. And even people who don't know a lot about the Phillies know about him. So I would very much like to see him. I really, really love him a lot.
Bates, you completely just destroyed my plan.
Yeah, I think Bates won. Bates' only knock was that it was too sensible, which is a weird way to lose.
But she picked my plan, though. I mean,
also,
tore it apart.
Also,
I did, didn't I?
Tim Lincecum is done, guys. Tim Lincecum, I love him.
Matt, you are not going to let this happen, right?
He's done.
Now.
I expected to throw up in my mouth a little bit when you suggested Tim Lincecum become a member of the Phillies, I don't know why, because
right.
I really thought I'd kind of hate it. Because
it makes sense.
Yeah, he's actually, to be honest, almost exactly why I think it would work. Aaron Harang isn't really that good either. They've signed a bunch of dudes who just aren't actually that good. But they have enough talent to keep them going with an ERA, you know, somewhere below 5.5 for most of the year. As long as they eat four, five, six innings in an outing, the Phillies will sign them. And if Lincecum can do that, even if he sucks or is hurt, I think he's worth a couple of million at my cost, because no one has any expectations of him at all.
And if he plays well, you move him at the deadline.
And I actually would kind of dig Tim Lincecum being on the Phillies, because I don't know why.
Well, we've been kind of negative about the Phillies' chances in 2016 and what they're going to do. And I think kind of understandably so. They're not going to be a good baseball team next year. But I do want to say that I think they've done a really great job of building up this farm system and of putting players in positions where I think they have 5 to 6 guys right now currently within their organization who are going to be in the lineup of the next good Phillies team. Not just J.P. Crawford, but we're talking about Nick Williams, and we're talking about, I think, Odubel Herrera was just a diamond in the rough that they found. He's fantastic. Between Alfaro and Casey Knapp, they have a couple options at catcher down at Reading. Depending on what you think of Cesar Hernandez, he might be a guy. They've got Michael Franco, who looks to be a beast. This is a team that could have a really strong homegrown lineup within 2 years.
It's almost unfair that Amaro got the axe this year after he's, you know, put together a decent. I mean, I think he deserved to get fired for how long it took. It's almost unfair that it happened now that, McPhail and Klentak, they're not walking into a horrible situation right with the farm system they have now.
Well, yeah. Amaro dug a hole 6 feet down and he climbed 4 feet back up.
Yeah, I just think, if he should have been fired, it should have been a couple of years ago.
To put a little context on this, I don't think I'm alone in feeling this, but it's not like a well-known opinion that I think a lot of problems were caused by the Phillies' previous president, David Montgomery, who took a leave of absence due to cancer, which is terrible. But that also, his absence also meant that Amaro was no longer reporting to him or taking direction from him. And that, I feel, is when things started to change, because they brought Pat Gillick back in a more active role. And he is who built the team. Him and Ed Wade built the teams that ended up winning, that 5-year stretch of dominance. Amaro did need to be fired. It was time. It was really time for him to go. His contract wasn't going to be renewed. It was time to make a clean break, but he did some good things on the way out the door.
Yeah.
The team is in a much better position, and they may actually be worse in 2016, but the future is just so bright. I'm so excited that I'm willing to go through another season where they may lose 100 games and have to recap so many of them.
They're healthier now just as an organization than they were in April.
They are. I didn't realize how much better I'd feel watching a bad team without some of those veterans. Like, Chase Utley not being there anymore was an odd relief. And I love him. I love Chase Utley. But watching him over the past couple of years, especially this season, it was torture. Every at bat, I'm just like, it's going to be bad. Oh, yeah, it's another bad at bat. Like, every single time. And so that was like a psychic weight lifted off of my brain, to not have to worry about that anymore. Because the guys on the team now have no connection to that past.
If I may, as we most oftenly do on this show, things happen while we're on the show, and Matt Goldman just messaged me and said he has some breaking news. So, Matt, what do you got?
The trade that Jonah Carey was talking about earlier with an NL West team, according to him, and I checked that it's the verified account, since this is now fake account off season.
Oh, it is that season.
So this is the real Jonah Carey. Says that the talks with the NL West team revolve around Andrelton Simmons, which would seem to point toward the Padres, because they have wanted a shortstop, or at least needed a shortstop, for about forever now. And so just off of he narrowed it down to the NL West. So, you could kind of see the Rockies with Tulo gone, but I think they have a couple shortstop prospects. Trevor Story, I know, is one. Obviously, Brendan Rodgers is more than a few years away. But if I had to guess, I would put that on the Padres.
So immediate thoughts, Liz, Mike?
What are the Braves doing?
Well, that's a good take. I like that.
Yeah, that's an excellent question.
What are they?
I don't know.
Like,
punishments for not winning the Golden Glove.
Until we know the return, it's all empty speculation. But at the same time,
if it's the Padres, who do they have left to give?
That's a good point.
Hunter
Renfroe, maybe?
Reimer Liriano, is that guy? Did I say that correct?
Yeah, Reimer Liriano. They have Hunter Renfroe.
They still had some guys.
They're not going to
trade Will Myers.
Oh, boy. That would be interesting. you laugh, but Preller could do something like that. Could he move? Could he move Kemp? Could he move that money?
No. No.
Simmons? Oh God, no.
It's Preller, so I can't rule anything out.
I guess it's true. I don't understand what the Braves are doing. Like, does anyone have any idea why they would? I mean, I guess it would depend on the return.
Why
of course,
Simmons would be on the market? No, I have no idea why Simmons would be on the market.
Like, I'm thrilled as, you know, as a fan of an NL East team for the Braves to continue to get embarrassingly worse
yes.
and be terrible all the time because I would love that. But that's just baffling to me in almost every way.
That's so weird. Well, I guess knowing us before this podcast gets released tomorrow morning, we'll know more. But, Matt, thank you for bringing that to our attention so we could talk about that.
No problem.
So back to the Phillies as we probably wrap up here. So I'm guessing, Liz, that you're not going with my plan based after Mike Bates talked you off the ledge.
So, I like aspects of everyone's plan, to be honest with you. I do. I figured that I probably would. I like the not trading Ken Giles part. I like the keeping Ryan Howard part. The idea of possibly getting better as a goal is that it's just so unattainable right now.
Should we give Liz the option of E, all of the above?
Yeah, that we said before that she had four options, but I guess we could end in a fifth, yeah.
There you go.
So E, all the... So guys, you know what I learned from this? We're actually not half bad at this.
I mean, some of us are.
Wow, okay. That's just... I mean, what do I say to that?
And none of you guys were like, sign, you know, David Price. You know, go get... Jason Hayward, like those are things that I want, but that just aren't going to happen. And you guys know that they're not going to happen either. So you kept them kind of in a bubble of sanity that had, you know, that as you get closer to the top of the bubble is where you get towards the more insane, but it's still in the sanity bubble.
So Liz, I will put you, you'll get the final thoughts here. What realistically should we expect from the Phillies in 2016?
I think they're going to be just about as bad. They may, like, if some of the young players take some leaps, there's a chance that they could get a little bit better and maybe lose 95 games or 94 or 93 instead of almost 100. But I mean, realistically, I just don't think they're going to be very good, and I don't want to expect them to be any better at all. because I value my sanity. And I'd rather not be disappointed. I'd rather be surprised by the Phillies because I think this is a team that could surprise me with being even marginally better. So I think it's going to be another rough season, but I'm willing to ride that out because the shore is in sight.
Mike, Matt, final thoughts? Phillies 2016?
You know, I think it's going to be harder for them to be worse.
You might be right.
I mean, they lost 99 games.
It was so bad this year.
Jerome Williams had a 5.80 ERA. David Buchanan started 15 games and had an ERA of almost 7. Sean O'Sullivan started 13 games with a 6 ERA.
Yeah, he did.
It's simply impossible. Alec Asher, who they acquired, who's a decent prospect, had an ERA over 9 over 7 starts.
Yeah.
It's they gave Kevin, speaking of guys who got a 2-year contract, one of their favorite teams, Kevin Correa, who was a Twin for 2 years, got 5 starts for the Phillies this year. It's going to be really hard for them to be this bad again, especially as they start to mix in guys like JP Crawford and Nick Williams. You know, I really do think that the Phillies have the foundations of a good team here, and that going forward we can all feel better, provided Cody Ashe is not allowed anywhere near a baseball field.
I can't stand him.
Speaking of guys who are bad at baseball.
Bates, if that had been one of your main points, trade Cody Ashe, you would have won outright.
But who would take him? That's the thing.
The moon. We could shoot him into the sun.
Shoot him into space.
Just keep him as a corner backup and just Don't let him get 150 points.
I want him. No, if he's on the team, Ryan Sandberg is going to play him because he was a full-time player, theoretically.
Ryan Sandberg isn't your manager anymore.
Oh, my God, you're right. I haven't done that in a really long time.
No, it's okay. It was traumatizing to have him there. I get it. But we can all agree, right, that Odubel Herrera is the truth.
Yeah, he played really well this year for them.
In the light.
Yeah.
Just the most marvelous surprise that I could ever ask for Odubel Herrera the whole year. No one ever thought he was going to be that good because he was a second baseman or an infielder. And they just moved him to center and
boom.
It's like he was born to play there, and he's so much fun. I adore him, and I think you're right, Bates. There is the foundation of a really strong team and a team that I'm going to really enjoy watching.
I love it when our guests tell me I'm right.
Matt, your final thoughts before Bates starts firing himself for more?
Jeez.
I'm with Bates. I just don't think that they can be that bad again. If they just sign one or two, you know, marginally decent pitchers, they're going to be better than the Kevin Correa, Aaron Harang, and Jerome Williams group. So I wouldn't be surprised if they won something like 75 games next year. I think that's doable, especially with the prospects that they had in the big leagues last year. Franco's going to be healthy. Herrera's got a full year under his belt. Aaron Alther is interesting. I think he surprised a lot of people, especially with his power. So I'm interested to see. I'll definitely be watching more Phillies games next year than I did this year.
And if the Braves actually trade Simmons, they really have a good chance of finishing above Atlanta next year. So it's possible. I'm with Bates. I'm with Matt. They're probably going to have a better year than they had last year just because I think it's impossible to be as bad.
But listen, Liz, as a Twins fan, prior to this year, I totally understand being so pessimistic.
It's not – I don't want it to come off as pessimistic because it's not – I'm not upset about it. It's kind of what has to happen for the Phillies to get to the other side of this. You just sort of have to survive because there is a better future in store for the Phillies. That future's just not now.
There is a simple dignity in simply enduring.
All right. Well, before Bates gets all crazy on us because he keeps drinking more scotch, we're going to get out of here. So, Liz, thank you for joining us and being the first guest for this new series. I hope we didn't embarrass your team too much with what we were doing.
Absolutely not. I had a great time. Thanks for having me on.
Mike.
Thank you, Liz.
Mike, Matt, as always, thanks for being here and putting up with me and doing this show every week.
No problem, Chris. Thank you very much.
Matt, are you still there? You've been quiet.
I'm still here. Okay. No, you're quite welcome for hopping on the show.
And thank you, the listeners, for supporting us and listening to us every week. It would be a huge favor to us if you would like the podcast on iTunes now that we have that all set up.
And leave comments. Exactly. Tell us about how great my plan was,
I was trying to avoid
it. We forgot to do Twitters.
Oh, Twitters, right. Yeah. Mike, your Twitter? I think it's at Mike Bates SBN.
At Mike Bates SBN, and I write a daily column for Daily Dish. And also, I was on NPR today. So if you look at All Things Considered, I was speaking with Audie Cornish about Major League Baseball's new domestic violence policy. You go to All Things Considered, go to the show on November 11th, and you can hear how great their audio editors are at making me not sound like an idiot.
Mike, don't leave us now, though. Don't think you're...
No. Okay.
All right.
No, I know where my roots are.
Okay. Liz, your Twitter, so people can follow you for Phillies commentary throughout the winter and next year.
It's Liz Rocher. It's R-O-S-C-H-E-R. And you can also find my stuff at The Good Fight and soon at Hardball Times.
So right on, Liz.
Go to both of those places because Liz is awesome. And Matt, at The Original Bull, correct?
Yep, at The Original Bull.
I have no idea where that came from.
My nickname in high school was The Bull, and it sounded like a cool Twitter handle when I was signing up.
Okay, and you can follow me at Chris R. Schubert. Four of us are pretty much always talking about baseball all the time. It could be any time of the day we're talking baseball. So if that interests you, make sure to follow all four of us. Like the show on iTunes. And as Mike said, leave comments. What team do you want to see us do next, the next time we get somebody on to do this show? Because that's important. What team we try to fix next with our wonderful plans. So once again, thank you to everyone in this Skype call for joining me and all of us and to put all this together. And thanks to you, the listeners, for listening to us. And we will see you guys next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.